It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast.
Screw the haters. We've been at this for an entire year, and we don't intend on stopping anytime soon. How you doing, Will?
We do have a lot of haters. There are whole hate groups that are opening. Going against Will and Sean is a hate crime.
I think we have more haters than we have fans, actually. So, yeah.
Well, you ask how I'm doing, and I usually like to separate this from what the actual episode's going to be about, but I've been really stewing. Mm-hmm. About the Oscar nominations all week. I've never been... Here's the thing.
You're still pissed off about last year's nominations.
Yeah, I'm complaining about the nominations in 1989 still. How did... What's his name? Not get a Best Director for Driving Miss Daisy.
Bruce Beresford.
How did he not get... Well, you know, I'm usually very pragmatic about... I know Cloud Atlas isn't going to get... It's my favorite film, but I know it's not going to get a nomination, so I'm not upset the morning when it does. But there are certain things that I think are going to get nominations, logically. Well, we'll get into it in the episode, but I've been stewing. I've been waiting to record this one. But before we get going, why don't you tell us a little bit about our podcast, Sean.
Well, 49th episode, and we're still on the road to 500, so... We're getting there 1% of the time, although I think we've lost some.
We're losing Facebook likes.
We know where they're going. They're liking the haters of the Will Sean Podcast page.
These haters. Somebody's got to stomp them.
They do. Oh, man. If only I had a gun.
I hear someone's going to take those away from
they
us.
They are. You take away my guns. This is not good.
I hold on to my guns and religion more than anything else.
It's true. What gets you through the day. Road to 500. Working on some stuff for later this year. Hopefully we're going to expand our reach a bit more. But same old, right? Download us, share us, tell people about us. Come on, folks. Yeah, but that's where we're at. That's what's going on with the podcast.
Who's our sponsor?
This week's episode is brought to you by Flu Season. Fuck you, Flu Season. I want my voice back.
Much like the Oscar-winning King's Speech, though, Sean, you have a voice.
Well, tell the people about how we were supposed to record this on Sunday.
We were going to record this right before the Golden Globes, or maybe it's better that we didn't, because now we actually can incorporate it into the show a little bit more. And Sean came over to watch the show with me, and he had no voice.
Well, I texted you earlier in the morning and said, I can't record today. I don't have any voice.
And I wasn't sure how severe this was, so he called me, and I mean... You couldn't really hear anything. And it was like, whoa.
Yeah, I literally had no voice.
And I think the first words out of my mouth were, oh yeah, we can't record.
Yeah. I was thinking, he doesn't believe me. I got to call him. And he's got to hear that I cannot create sounds with my mouth. And that was also very frustrating Golden Globes because I couldn't voice my opinions during the show. I had to tweet things.
Oh, what was that snarky response, Sean? What was that about?
Awful. But now it's back. It's robust. We're ready to go.
Ready to go. And on today's show, it's Oscars. This is our Oscar special. You know, we started the podcast this way, and damn it, we're going
to... Every year, we need to honor the 1992 Sylvester Stallone movie.
Yes.
That's what we're doing today?
So we're going to do a reading of the script
for
the
Oscar.
Movie Oscar.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic.
Scene one. No, we're talking about the nominations, which are out. And like I said, I have some strong opinions. So you know what? Let's cut this... This bullshit, and let's get right to it. And,
go ahead.
We're going to start with a supporting category. We're going to start with Best Supporting Actress. And the nominees are Amy Adams, The Master, Sally Field, Lincoln, Anne Hathaway, Les Miserables, Helen Hunt, The Sessions, and the surprise, Jackie Weaver, Silver Linings Playbook.
Now, what had Jackie Weaver been in previously? Was she in that movie Animal Crackers?
Yeah, with the Marx Brothers. No, Animal Kingdom.
That's the one.
Animal Kingdom. She was a surprise nomination 2 years ago for Animal Kingdom. Great Australian, crime movie. And now she was a surprise in this. And I can't help but think she just got... I mean, Silver Linings Playbook is such a good ensemble that she just kind of got caught up in that.
But she was good in the movie.
She
anchored the film. She's the only sane person in that whole film.
That's true. She is. I mean, this category, it's got to be Anne Hathaway all
the
way.
It's hers to lose. I mean, the only one here I could see having any chance is Sally Field in Lincoln.
And they like her. They really like her.
She's an Academy favorite. If Lincoln starts picking up steam, but really this is Anne Hathaway's category. She was so good in that one scene. It's literally one scene in the movie.
Yeah.
And she sings the song, and that's it, and it's just, it's done.
And she's also had a hell of a year between that. She got a lot of praise being Catwoman, because people didn't really think she'd be able to pull that one off. And I think it's just Hollywood's feeling Hathaway. It's her time, too.
Yeah.
I feel like this is maybe the lock of the night, even more than Best Actor. I kind of feel that this might be the lock
of the
night.
Yeah, and this is their apology to Anne Hathaway for forcing her to co-host with James Franco 2 years ago.
Which, that was a great line Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, one of them had, where Anne Hathaway had never been that alone since James Franco abandoned her at the Oscars.
So we're going with Anne Hathaway for The Miserables?
The Miserables. And by the way, people, we were predicting this before the Guild...
I gotta hear what the Guild has to say.
So...
But you know what? The Guild Awards, for people that don't know, those are voted on by the people in that guild. So Screen Actors Guild are voted by actors, directors by directors. But these categories are voted on by the entire Academy. And we also have to keep in mind that the Academy is a bunch of old white dudes. And, you know, they like Anne Hathaway.
Old white dudes love Anne Hathaway.
They do love Anne Hathaway. So always keep that in mind. And I think we tend to forget that. And that's how things like The King's Speech wins.
Well... The next category is a pretty tricky one, I think,
very tricky
to predict. And it's Best Supporting Actor. And everyone in this category has won before. Most of them for Best Supporting Actor. Alan Arkin, Argo. Robert De Niro, Silver Linings Playbook. Philip Seymour Hoffman, The Master. Tommy Lee Jones, Lincoln. And Christoph Waltz, Django Unchained.
I went back and forth on this, and I was hovering towards Christoph Waltz for a while because it's such a flashy, fun performance.
And he has a lot of screen time, too, more than some of these guys.
He does. Same reason Tommy Lee Jones, very crowd-pleasing performance in Lincoln. And so I was also going back to these are all old white dudes, with the exception of Philip Seymour Hoffman. His role, while phenomenal in The Master, was not the showcase of that movie. I settled on Robert De Niro, though.
Really? Like, oh, he's back, he's done
he's
something
back.
Good?
He's back, he did something good.
It's been a long time.
It hasn't been a long time. I think it's a fun... I have problems with the performance. If I were voting, I wouldn't give it to him, but I feel like he's going to win this. What do you think?
I'm going Tommy Lee Jones.
Okay.
Because I think there's a lot of Lincoln love, and as great as Daniel Day-Lewis is in the film, Tommy Lee Jones brings so much life and humor and... just a ballsiness to the film that I think people are going to appreciate.
With the exception of Philip Seymour Hoffman, all of these roles are, in a way, very humorous characters.
Yeah, that's true. Christoph Waltz is Alan Arkin, very humorous.
You're laughing at all these except for Philip Seymour Hoffman. So, except maybe just seeing him squeezed onto a motorcycle, maybe the only humorous scene in that movie.
Now, people do love Christoph Waltz, and I think people got a kick out of seeing him give another speech. Because he does all... You love his speeches.
When Quentin called me again, he asked me to come with him on this journey. And like a good soldier, we followed him into the deserts of Utah and into the south of this country. I can just imagine that's the acceptance speech he's going to give.
I mean, it's the same speech he gave when he won for Bastards.
Well, exactly. Basically. Except there they traipsed through Europe. So you're going Tommy Lee Jones, I'm going Robert De Niro, which means Alan Arkin's going to win.
Honestly, of all those, I think he's the least deserving.
Alan Arkin?
Yeah.
Like, is he just doing the Alan Arkin role?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he's good in the movie, but I feel like these other people are much more important to their film than Alan Arkin.
Yeah, definitely.
So what are we doing next? Oh, let's go to some of the screenplay categories, shall we? We'll start with adapted screenplay.
Hold on. All right.
Argo.
Mm-hmm.
Beasts of the Southern Wild, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook. I gotta think Lincoln because it's the most prestigious writer in the group, Tony Kirshner.
And yeah, exactly. It's the most magisterial screenplay, and it's a damn well-written movie.
Yeah,
taking an issue like the passing of an amendment. I remember when you saw the film early and told me it's not really about the passing of an amendment.
Yeah.
And making it palatable and understandable and
a box office hit.
And a hit, and just making it something that it's a weird pill to package and swallow for a big Hollywood film. And he did such a great job of just bringing this whole world to life. So yeah, I think Link and Tony Kushner. Although I could see Beasts of the Southern Wild getting it, just if they decide to throw it to...
Because sometimes they like to give the indie film...
Yeah, and give the new kid
an
award.
What about Life of Pi? So many people felt the book was unadaptable. So does that get any...
Yeah, but that movie's more of a visual feast. It's not something you watch on the strength of its writing.
So Ang Lee gets more of the credit,
yeah,
basically. Okay.
And then Silver Linings Playbook, I don't know. It's good. It's got a problematic script.
I would say Lincoln is the well, you know, Argo.
Argo's got that third act problem that people, I think, will work against it. That the third act feels very contrived.
We're going Lincoln.
Yes.
So then, best original screenplay: Amour, Django Unchained, Flight, Moonrise Kingdom, Zero Dark Thirty. The snub in this category that I thought was actually going to get a nomination was, I actually really believed Looper was going to. It got Writers Guild. I think it's deserving of it. I think it's a smart sci-fi film.
That's not a movie that old white guys like.
Nah, you would have thought with Bruce Willis. Old white guys like Bruce Willis.
I don't know here. I'm thinking this is the I think this is the Quentin's category.
You know what? I feel like they want to honor him again. You're getting a lot of... Django got a lot more love than I actually thought it was going to get.
Yeah.
And I think people realize this is one of the genius filmmakers we have now. And we haven't honored him since Pulp Fiction in any way.
Yeah.
Give him a screenplay.
Well, I feel like, though, you know, that if Moonrise Kingdom hadn't had as many N-words as it did... I would think that the N-word issue would work against Django Unchained.
That's true. Wes Anderson cannot stop saying that word.
It's
in his
great.
Film.
Those kids, those got filthy mouths, those kids did.
I was very happy. I don't think it'll win, but I was very happy to see Amour get so much love in the Oscars overall. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later, I'm sure. But
so Amour got a lot of Amour.
It did get a lot of Amour. Michael Haneke, I love this filmmaker, and I was happy that it snuck into original screenplay there. You know what, though? Mark Boal wrote a... I mean, it's going to be too controversial because of the torture, but Mark Boal did a hell of a job with that. I mean, it's like it's investigative journalism, well, like in a script.
Could we
it's
argue like, that Zero Dark Thirty is too controversial with the torture, Django Unchained is too controversial because of the race, and they could split the difference, and something like Moonrise Kingdom could slip in there?
You know, Wes Anderson's never won anything.
He hasn't.
Ever.
And Roman Coppola? Got to give another Coppola. Every Coppola needs an Oscar. It's the rule.
And this is, you know, this is Wes Anderson's most beloved film in a while.
Yeah.
That said,
and his most successful
I would
film
go
in a while.
Django Unchained.
Okay.
That would be my guess.
Okay. What are we looking at next year?
Next, we would do Best Animated Film. And the nominees are Brave, Frank and Weenie, Paranorman, The Pirates Band of Misfits.
The Pirates! Exclamation point. That's Band true. Of Misfits.
Wreck-It Ralph. Three Disney films.
You know what? Just like they gave the Oscar last year to Gore Verbinski, I feel like Frankenweenie, which I have not yet seen, I feel like that's going to get Tim Burton. Would it be his first Oscar?
It's the first Oscar Tim Burton has received.
Yeah.
I think maybe the second he's ever been nominated for, even.
So I think they could give it to... I'm going to go with Tim Burton. I thought Wreck-It Ralph was far superior to Brave.
But I do, too.
People just vote for Brave because it's Pixar, you know?
Yeah, Brave didn't quite work for me. Frankenweenie, actually, of all of these, and I've not seen the Pirates Band of Misfits...
Look like crap.
But Frankenweenie felt like a very personal film. Tim Burton's most personal film in a long time. And I'd like to see him get an Oscar for
You know
this.
What got snubbed in this category, which... apparently, by all accounts, a very charming animated film, The Rabbi's Cat.
Is this a thing?
Yeah, it's a real movie, The Rabbi's Cat.
The
little French cat.
Well, I was going to say, this is the first year in a while you didn't have a foreign film.
Is there? There's no DreamWorks movie. Oh, was The Pirates Band of Misfits? Was that Sony or DreamWorks?
That's
Sony, I think. I mean, it's the same Aardman. This isn't... Yeah, DreamWorks, you know, what was their big movie? The
Rise of the
Guardians.
They were really thinking that was going to get a nomination.
So, I think let's go with Frankenweenie. I think that's going to get it.
Okay.
Yep.
I hope Frankenweenie does it. I thought it was a charming little film. next, and we're not going to do every category, but...
sound editing.
Yes, but we are going to do the sound editing and mixing categories. We are just chugging along here with cinematography. And the nominees are Anna Karenina, Django Unchained, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Skyfall.
Now, Skyfall had the cinematography by Roger Deakins, who has worked with the Coen brothers forever. He's a brilliant cinematographer, and this movie looked amazing. I think it's one of the best things he's done, which is high praise considering how much he has done.
He shot, even beyond Coen, he shot Shawshank Redemption. Yep. I mean, he's brilliant.
And he's never won before. Robert Richardson, who shot Django Unchained, I didn't think this was his best work.
And he's won like three times.
He's won a bunch. He won for The Aviator. He won...
JFK?
JFK. He won for...
Then he won last year for Hugo.
And he won last year for Hugo as well. I really didn't think this was his strongest stuff. Anna Karenina is beautifully shot. I just think that movie was too weird for people. I'm glad it got nominated. It had some mind-blowing cinematography. As did Life of Pi, which I thought was the best 3D movie I've ever seen, with the exception of Hugo. And then Lincoln, Jamus Kaminski, shot. It's not his best stuff either.
Yeah, and he's won before.
Yeah. So I'm hoping Skyfall wins.
I am hoping so much Skyfall wins because I love Deakins. He's my favorite cinematographer. However, I think it's going to be Life of Pi.
You think so?
I was talking to a friend of the podcast, Zach Fox, and we were talking about the awards, and he says Life of Pi is this year's Hugo. It is going to win every technical award. And then it's not going to get any love.
Well, it wasn't nominated for any acting. It wasn't nominated for any acting categories, which always says something.
But it is like that. Like, last year, Hugo was this big 3D kind of spectacle. It won all the technical awards. And I think he might be right. I think Life of Pi is going to win a lot of technical awards. And I think with cinematography, a lot of times, the people who vote just see the film that's the most beautiful looking.
Yeah.
And they don't realize how much CGI. Like, Avatar won cinematography. That movie was not... That movie's more computer-generated than cinematography.
Right, but it still had a cinematographer. I wouldn't argue that it shouldn't have. I thought it was a beautifully shot movie. It's just a different definition. It's the same argument about how someone like, what's his name, Gollum.
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis should get nominated for acting categories because it's the opposite problem. The digitalness of the character blurs the fact that there's an actual performance there, where with this, the digital augmentation of the image...
So you wouldn't have a problem with Life of Pi being
the most beautiful movie-looking movie. And I also think it's beautiful cinematography. I thought it was, you know, well shot. What I think the point I'm trying to make is that the where technology can work against the actors, technology can work for the favor of the cinematographers. Roger Deakins also shot the first little-known fact, shot the first digitally color-graded film, which was O Brother, Where Art Thou? That was the first movie where they took the image and then they put it on the computers and they augmented the colors and they washed it out and they faded it using digital technology.
In the past,
they would have to physically wash out the film stock. But yeah, that was the first movie to be digitally graded, and that was something that Lord of the Rings did very... Now every movie is digitally graded.
Yeah.
Although, I'm going to make the argument that Lincoln may win here because if the Academy just goes on a roll on a Spielberg love fest, they're just going to check the box down the line. And Lincoln could pick it up just on momentum.
I'm going Life of Pi.
Okay.
Okay, what do we got next? We're getting into some of the bigger categories.
Documentary
now.
Short feature.
Which, obviously,
I always look for anything
everyone knows.
Mondays at Racine.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Cynthia Wade and Robin Honan. He does good work. Good on you, Robin Honan.
Now we're going to move to Best Actor.
Uh-oh.
Is that what we're going to next?
Oh, yes,
my
so.
Number system is all screwed up here. Because I changed the order. Let's go Best Actor.
Why not?
And the nominees are Bradley Cooper, Silver Linings Playbook, Daniel Day-Lewis, Lincoln, Hugh Jackman, Les Miserables, Joaquin Phoenix, The Master, and Denzel Washington, Flight. You gotta go Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah, and, you know, I talk about this last year, Generally, the Academy likes to give Oscars for acting to characters who are playing historical figures. It happens all the time. It's one thing to play a character that we all, you know and love. For example, Colin Firth 2 years ago, we all had very fond images of what King George VI was like.
Yeah, so we all knew.
Yeah, tapped into that cultural
memory.
Well, I had
that big poster of him on my bedroom wall in high school.
True, you were a big King George VI guy. And while I think the genius of Daniel Day-Lewis's performance as Lincoln is that he took this character that exists in our mind as Abraham Lincoln 67 years ago, this stentorian caricature, and he turned it into a human being. I remember when we saw the first trailer, and I've talked about this, when he opens his mouth and he's got this high-pitched, nasally voice, going, that doesn't sound right. But when you see the movie, it's so perfect.
Because in your head, you're like, he should be like the Hall of Presidents.
Exactly. Or at the very least, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yes.
The
definitive portrayal
and
of Lincoln.
What he did is
now.
He brought this character who exists so much as just a cultural, almost as a myth, and he humanized him to such a level, and he made you realize how much of Lincoln's success relied on the fact that he was a down-home Illinois, Kentucky boy, and that he was insanely brilliant and who just understood people, and he knew how to get shit done by being folksy.
It humanizes a legend, but still holds him in legendary status.
Exactly.
At the same time, which is a tough balance.
And it's just, you watch that film and you do not feel like you're watching a movie. You feel like there was a camera crew there, this is a documentary, and like, yeah, of course, that's exactly what it looked like. That's how it sounded.
Is there any room for an upset here? Do you see anyone, like, splitting a vote?
I see Joaquin Phoenix perhaps pulling it out because his.
Even though he hates awards.
That doesn't matter. He was such an animal in that movie. And he
I love
created
his physical
his
presence.
Physicality and just the scene where he loses his shit in that prison cell. I've never seen anything like that. It makes Robert De Niro Raging Bull look like a pussy. It's a virtuosic performance. And we can, if we want to just, I want to jump into the master here for 1 second. I read an interesting essay that compared the style of Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix to Joaquin Phoenix is channeling sort of the method school of acting, the
Brando.
James Dean, Brando. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is channeling that earlier pre-World War II style, which would be more of the Cary Grant, Gary Cooper, more of a formalized style of acting. And I thought that was a brilliant observation, and just Joaquin Phoenix is just an animal in this movie. And it's a performance you don't see very often. And you also made an interesting point. If Daniel Day-Lewis wins, he will be the only actor
to win 3 Best Actor awards.
Right.
Anyone else who's won, like Nicholson's won 3 Oscars, but one of them supporting.
What about Meryl Streep? She's won 3 Best Actress awards. She won for The Iron Giant.
And Sophie's Choice.
Yeah, which was Best Actress, and she won for...
Wasn't it supporting? Wasn't our other one supporting, like Kramer versus Kramer?
Was that supporting? Was that actress?
That was supporting.
Well, I don't remember,
supporting.
But... Yeah,
but
so
either way, he'd be the first actor to do, because I think Katharine Hepburn won 4
right.
Oscars for Best Actress, but he'd be the first actor to do that, and it really
he'd
says
be pooping
about
on Tom Hanks.
What is so unique about Daniel Day-Lewis's talent? Like, what,
I don't know, but they bring him out of his little genie bottle every couple of years, and... with the exception of something like The Ballad of Jack and Rose or 9, he generally, just knocks it out of the park. And even in those movies, he never gives a bad performance.
Yeah, he's not bad in 9. It's just
it's a shitty movie.
It's a very shitty movie. And, actually, everyone in this category, it's hard to kick anyone out. Like, Bradley Cooper really surprised me.
He's just happy. He should just be happy to be there.
Yeah, he surprised me in that movie. He showed a side of himself I hadn't seen in a movie.
Yeah,
before.
But I still had problems with that character and that performance. But
Denzel Washington's very Hugh Jackman. I thought gave one of the best performances of his career. I know you don't like the
shitty movie. Yeah,
I don't think it's a shitty movie, but I thought he was very good. The one person who I felt got snubbed was John Hawkes. Is excellent in The Sessions. I mean, it's a tricky role because you're not moving the whole movie other than your head. But
Helen Hunt got nominated, but she's naked for most of it. So.
And you know what? She's not all that good in the movie.
Really?
He's the one. He's very funny. The Sessions is actually a very funny movie, and a lot of that is the warmth and humor that John Hawkes brings to his polio-stricken character who can't move.
Crowd pleaser. That's a good double feature with a Moore.
It's, let me tell you what. Having seen...
And a Rust and Bone. You want a triple feature that'll really just make you laugh.
Having seen all 3 of those movies, I assure you, The Sessions is uproarious. Now we're going to get to a category that I think could be one of the best in recent years, and it's Best Actress.
Yes.
And the nominees are Jessica Chastain, Zero Dark Thirty, Jennifer Lawrence, Silver Linings Playbook, Emmanuel Riva, Amour,
Quetzalcoatl Jones.
Cool. I was practicing it, and now I'm all, now I can't do it in the moment of pressure. Quavangene.
Little black girl.
Wallace, Beast of the Southern Wild, and Naomi Watts, The Impossible. Now, I think this is an extremely close race. And I guess you have to say the two front runners are Chastain and Lawrence, both of whom are brilliant in completely different ways.
J-Chaz versus J-Law.
Chastain is so obsessive. It's one of the great obsessive performances you're going to see. And Jennifer Lawrence is... She does everything in the movie. She's charming. She's wounded. She's...
angry. She's hilarious. She's sexy. Yeah.
So...
God bless that woman.
This is... This, I mean, if I was... And, oh, by the way, you have not seen Amour yet. Emmanuel Riva, I would have a hard time not voting for her. And Amour has gotten a lot of love, a lot more love than I expected in a lot of these categories. She's brilliant, not only because, you know, she plays this woman who slowly deteriorates. It's not just mentally that she's deteriorating. Well, it's not even mentally. It's physically. So it's a great physical performance. She's the oldest person ever nominated for an Oscar.
And she's doing it in French.
I know.
Yeah, imagine that.
So, I mean, it's
and well, and
it's
and
a
little
gut-wrenching performance.
And she's been around, for those of you who don't know, she was a big actress in the French New Wave. She's been around since forever.
Hiroshima Monamore, yeah.
And then you have, so she's the oldest nominee for Best Actress.
By the way, do you think... You and I are the only two people listening to this podcast who have seen Hiroshima Monamore.
I'm sure it was shoved down the throat of one of those Chapman boys at film school.
Probably.
At some point, one of them, Bob Blankenhide's nodding his head in agreement right now.
But you're right. It also has the youngest nominee ever.
Yes, and the previous youngest nominee, what is with the youngest nominees and these fucked up names, had been Keisha Castle Hughes for Whale Rider. She'd been 13.
Yes.
And so, Will, what'd you think of the performance of little Quetzalcoatl Jones in Beast of Southern Wild?
Here's the thing about Quavangene Wallace. She was 6 when she made the movie. She's 9 now. I got a big issue with her. And now, look, I'll be honest with you. As far as her being nominated, I'm having trouble thinking of someone who should fill her place. So I can't get all angry about who got snubbed here. Because I don't know if anyone necessarily got snubbed.
Who else was nominated for the SAGs? Was there anyone that was just
like Helen Mirren Hitchcock, that's not so great a performance. Marion Cotillard and Rushton Bone isn't very good, I think. So I can't really get angry about her being nominated. But if she wins, I swear to God, I'm going to kick everyone out of my apartment and burn it to the ground. Because that would be bullshit. Because I know, yes, oh, Quavangene, she's so natural in the film. Yeah, because she was fucking 6 years old. I have trouble believing she was doing anything nuanced or making any actual choices where these other actresses have to do that. I feel like she was just a little kid who, like, hold this chicken. Talk about the... Like, when she is reading the voiceover for the film, I don't believe she knows what she was saying when she was reading.
Although, if you read in interviews, the director says that he would go over that dialogue with her and she would make decisions. She said, no, I don't like this word. She actually had some input. I know you don't buy it for a second, but apparently she had some input in how that was read and what words were said and what she was saying.
Look, I have a lot of issues with the film in general, and maybe we'll just... get to them now before we get the Best Picture. But, I mean, I don't know what Beast of the Southern Wild is saying. I feel like it's saying that being poor is magical. Like, I really feel the film isn't saying anything. It's just about feeling, and I guess that's all right, but in this scenario, it did not work for me.
Can't a movie just be about an emotional journey? Does it have to have such a strong narrative journey?
Yes, it can. I mean, look, I mean, one of my favorite movies of all time is 2001.
Yeah.
And someone could easily say, well, what is that? But I feel like maybe because it's going for bigger things, the film is saying, these people leave them alone in the bathtub and they're poor. Like, this girl should be removed from by Child Protective Services. There is nothing magical.
You don't like how she lights the stove?
There's nothing magical about the life she's leading, and it's treated as magical. And I know there's some magical realism element to the film, but I feel like the message of the film is saying at the end, leave these people alone.
Let the 6-year-old make her cat food stew. 2
yeah.
by herself.
I just think Beasts of Southern Wild is really not that good of a movie.
I enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought it was very poetical. I thought it was the first film by who I consider to be a very exciting up-and-coming director. I thought it did things. It took us places I'd never seen before. And
it took you to slums of New Orleans.
So that's fine.
I shouldn't shit on that because I like seeing some terrible places too.
Yeah.
But I feel like it. I feel like the film has a very confusing message.
Okay, it's not perfect. It's a little twee. It's a little too fussy. But it's still. I thought it was a beautiful movie, and I thought she was kind of a revelation.
Well, does she? Do you think she has a shot at winning?
No, I think this is going to be. I feel like Jennifer. See, I feel like Jessica Chastain and Jennifer Lawrence could split it.
Both feel like the future of Hollywood.
They do.
And well, I think if they split the vote, I think
Emmanuel Riva.
Because
right,
because
the Academy,
like,
well, they'll nominate these young actors, but, you know, unless you're Jodie Foster, you're not getting it.
I mean,
or an Anna Paquin.
You have two people who very much are right, could split the vote, and then you have this older, beloved actress in this film that clearly the Academy was drawn to in some way, giving a really phenomenal.
I think watching Jennifer Lawrence Silver Linings Playbook, it's like watching a young Meryl Streep. Like, I think
we're
looking at the next, you know, I think Jessica Chastain, I've loved her in everything I've seen her in. I've told this story. I saw her years ago on stage in Oscar Wilde's Salome against Al Pacino. Didn't know who she was clueless, and she just destroyed Al Pacino. And it wasn't until like a year and a half ago that I figured out that, holy shit, that was Jessica Chastain. She was like 19 years old, and she just went toe-to-toe, and she was fierce. And you know, her and Jennifer Lawrence, I hope Jennifer Lawrence just finishes these Hunger Games movies and keeps making interesting films.
This was the year, and we're going to talk about this, I think, in a future episode, but this was the year Jennifer Lawrence really became a star, so maybe they want to reward that. I also, though, think Jessica Chastain, if she, you know, Zero Dark Thirty is getting unjustly shit on a little bit now, and maybe they want to make this the one award that the film gets. I don't know. Honestly, if I had a vote for this, I might end up shooting myself going crazy. You're going Jennifer Lawrence?
I would go Jennifer Lawrence because it was just more charming performance. And she went such a range. I feel like Jessica Chastain, while it was a phenomenal performance, it was also a very, I don't want to say one note, but it was a very narrow performance.
I think it's such a coin flip. I'll just, to be different, I'll go Chastain.
There you go.
Now we actually do have to move along. Best Director. And the nominees are David O. Russell, Silver Linings Playbook, Ang Lee, Life of Pi, Steven Spielberg, Lincoln, Michael Haneke, Amour, and Ben Zeitlin. Beasts of the Southern Wild.
This is an odd category, Will.
This category is the reason I'm so pissed off. I'm shocked Affleck's not there, but I'm even more shocked Bigelow is not here. Here you have this woman who directed one of the most meticulously well-made films I've seen in the last few years. She handled everything from the killing of Bin Laden, from the framing it with 9/11, and kind of the emotional weight that killing Bin Laden took off the nation's shoulders. She handled everything about this movie perfectly. She brought tension to a film that you know the outcome of. I am disgusted that Kathryn Bigelow is not nominated in this category. She's an incredible director. I can't help but think maybe there's a level of sexism to this. Maybe I'm getting a little
crazy.
Maybe
they're like, oh, we already gave it to the girl 2 years ago.
We already gave it to this woman. She doesn't need to be
nominated.
Oh,
this uppity woman. Can't get rid of her.
I've been a fan of Bigelow's forever. Long before Hurt Locker, even.
Oh, she deserved it for, you know, Point Break. K-19, The Widowmaker.
Point Break, great. For what it is. Yeah. Strange Days, a great film. Near Dark, one of the best vampire films I've ever seen.
For Twilight Eclipse.
Yeah, until that came along. I'm really disgusted that the surprises in this category, I was surprised this Ben Zeitlin got nominated for Ben. And I don't necessarily think he should be. Because I've already said my take on the film.
I don't think David O. Russell should be nominated for Silver Linings Playbook.
I don't think he did a better job than Bigelow. So
no,
Affleck.
It was a movie that didn't need to be painted with directed with such a heavy hand, and yet he did. The movie didn't seem to. What am I trying to say here? It would have played even better if he had just let it play. But he did weird stuff with pushing in the camera, and there was just some weird shit. That being said, I'm so glad that Tom Hooper didn't slide in here.
I'm glad
for Les Miserables,
because he somehow slid into the DGA, and O'Russell or Tarantino deserved his spot.
Yeah. And I think there's a little bit of backlash against Ben Affleck for some reason.
When are we are we going to just accept the fact that this guy's doing good things? Why? Everybody's like, it's still like, oh, he's still fucking Daredevil. He's still blowing up an answer. When are we going to accept The Town is a phenomenal film? Argo's a phenomenal film. Let's just accept
You'll get it. There. You'll get it. I think his day will come.
But I'm really bothered by another. I'm happy Michael Haneke snuck in.
Yeah, there. Michael Haneke is one of the great auteurs working now.
He's
one of the great European directors.
Fascinating filmmaker.
Dark, fucked up movies.
He challenges an audience like few filmmakers do.
And the fact that he's getting this kind of recognition is really refreshing. So.
The only two people who are also nominated with the DGA who are nominated this are Ang Lee and Spielberg.
That being said, I think Spielberg's going to get this.
Looking at this, I think Spielberg's going to get it too. If Affleck or Bigelow had been nominated, oddly enough, I would have
Now,
thought.
I read something in the Hollywood Reporter today that there's a write. You can write in nominees for any of these categories.
Really?
So there's always a write-in option.
Is there a Ben Affleck write-in campaign?
There's a Ben Affleck write-in campaign to write
people,
him in.
This is the one category that people seem really...
Well, so these nominees for directing...
They can't understand why Bigelow or Affleck didn't get nominated.
Once again, the way these nominations were chosen is that the directors chose who they wanted nominated, but then the entire Academy gets to vote on the winner.
But it's not all the directors, right? Like, it's not the entire DGA.
No, because I think it's only feature film. I don't think it's...
So,
I think the DGA Film Awards can get nominated by the television directors as well.
I know you like... Yes, you're okay. Exactly right. Now, I know you like Beasts better than me, but would you agree that Bigelow deserves a nomination over Zeitlin?
I think she does, yeah.
Yeah, I think you have to go with Spielberg.
And this would make him be his third Best Director award. And, you know, Spielberg, whether or not you like some of his more recent stuff, he's still Spielberg. His name is still synonymous with films. And it almost feels right. And this movie was an epic film. I really think it was one of... In his top 10.
Again, there's a lot of Amour love, a la a Roman Polanski for The Pianist. Could Michael Haneke split some of this very divided thing up?
Because Michael Haneke never directed A Chinatown. Michael Haneke never directed some of the... Rosemary's Baby. That award for Roman Polanski was also
for
a body of work. I don't feel like Michael Haneke has that cachet.
Ah, I like what you did there.
I didn't even intend to. For those of you who don't know, Cachet was a Michael Haneke film.
My favorite Michael Haneke.
They may give him the white ribbon for The Funny Games that was Amour. Yeah.
I'm going to be pulling for him. I know he won't win. I would go Spielberg, too, if I was a betting man. But I'm going to be pulling for Haneke. That brings us to Best Picture. And remember, we still have an enemy. We still have a lot to do with this episode.
Hey, Andrew Marchant. Sorry, I just wanted to slide that in there.
Best Picture. Argo. Amour. Beasts of the Southern Wild. Django Unchained. Les Miserables. Life of Pi. Lincoln. Silver Linings Playbook. Zero Dark Thirty. Zero Dark Thirty, to me, is the film that should win hands down, but it won't win.
Before we jump in very quickly, I want to point out that one of the producers for Django Unchained, Reginald Hudlin, is, for those of you who know, the director of Friday.
So he could be an Oscar winner.
Yeah, he was the Oscar winner. He was also behind The Boondocks.
Now, going into this, I felt a lot. There was a lot of Lincoln seemed to be pulling away. And then when Affleck and Bigelow both didn't get nominated, because I thought Zero Dark and Argo were the two best chances. When they both didn't get nominated for Best Director, I felt that means there's not enough love for Argo to win Best Picture. But now I'm wondering, could there be a backlash? Could there be a weird, well, Affleck deserves something, Argo was so good, we're voting Argo. Could this be one of the first of only, I think, three times, first time since Driving Miss Daisy, where it wins Best Picture without being nominated for director?
I feel like it could. I would be shocked if it won. Once again, we could see a Lincoln steamroll just go through the whole night, and that would be the safe establishment
and
decision.
Yeah, it's the safe choice. That's why I kept thinking...
When have the Oscars ever done anything risky? Let's be honest.
The last time the Oscars surprised me, and it wasn't in a good way, was Crash, when it beat Brokeback Mountain. That surprised me, because Crash wasn't very good. You know, I keep thinking Lincoln's going to win, and I like Lincoln more than The King's Speech, but I keep thinking about the year The King's Speech won, where that was a safe choice, and The Social Network was the film of the moment. And I kept thinking Zero Dark Thirty is more the film of the moment, but... I think the best shot of beating it might be Argo, even though it doesn't have a director.
Well, Argo is the happy version of Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, it's the happier CIA film. Silver Linings got a lot more love than I thought. It got a director nomination. Do you think something like that could sneak in?
Yes. I mean, it got a lot of acting awards.
More than I thought it would.
It could win. It's a kind of movie where you can't... It's a crowd pleaser like The Artist. You can't walk out of the movie and not have a smile on your face. I watched the first half of Silver Linings Playbook and had to stop. Not had to, but just wasn't able to complete it at the time. And I had very mixed feelings about it, but the second half of the movie really...
It charms you.
It charms you, and it charms you by being just a superlative romantic comedy. It checks all the boxes. You know where it's going. It just does it so well. And Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper are so winning in that movie. The movie suffers from severe problems, but that being said, it's a charming fucking movie.
We pretty much feel, though, it's probably between Lincoln and Argo.
Yes. I think it's between Lincoln and Argo.
I like the idea of Argo winning, because these are two films, honestly, I probably like about even.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of Argo winning, I think, because Affleck got snubbed, there's something about, like, good.
And, you know, George Clooney, can't give him enough good stuff.
You can't.
If Argo wins, I can already see the headlines, Argo, fuck yourself.
Yes.
But, Will, what's missing from this list?
Well, and by the way, though, I think Lincoln will win.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. And now we're getting into it here. About the Academy, look, the Academy could be an enemy every year.
Every week if you wanted it to.
Yeah, because they fuck up a lot. But they made a particular rule change a few years back. A few years back, there was a film called The Dark Knight.
I remember, a small little film.
And it was both, it making billions of dollars, and audiences loved it, critics loved it, the industry loved it. Everyone literally loved this film. And then the day of the Oscar nominations came out, and instead of hearing The Dark Knight, we heard The Reader. And The Reader was nominated. And I was like, huh? And there was all this backlash. Like, when are we going to nominate more populist films? So they, because of that, said, we're going to have 10 nominees.
Or up then, to 10 nominees.
Well, they changed it since to be anywhere between 5 and 10 nominees. Whoever gets 5% of first place votes up to 10 nominees gets nominated. And we can allow more populist films this year. Well, this year there was an equally populist, billion-dollar, critically acclaimed, everybody-loved film called Skyfall.
Also, a small indie film.
Small indie film. Yeah. But everybody loves this film. Audiences flock to it. It's the kind of film that's perfect. We can nominate this.
Biggest James Bond film ever. Global hit.
Everybody loves it. Bring in viewers. Skyfall is the reason you change the voting. It's for movies like Skyfall. And guess what, Academy? You fucked up and you forgot to nominate Skyfall.
There's only nine movies.
So fuck you, rule changes that you made a couple years. What was the point? It's all masturbation. This makes no sense. Why did you make this rule change in the first place? It was to nominate films like Skyfall. And yeah, Sean, there are nine nominees. They could have had a 10th nominee and it could have been Skyfall. And I mean, I'm not saying Skyfall should win, because it wouldn't win. But guess what? Nominate the fucking thing. The Producers Guild did. Oh my God, what was the point of any of this? And by the way, you did this because of The Dark Knight. Dark Knight Rises doesn't get any nominations. Not that it's going to get a picture nomination, but you would have thought, like, we'd throw it some...
Editing something.
Yeah, nothing. Oh my God. Come on. Fuck you, rule change. Fuck you, 10 nominees. You might as well just go back to 5 and make this list a lot simpler. It's really stupid. It's a stupid rule change.
At least we could say Les Mis was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there are things now that are nominated for Best Picture. The Blind Side has been as a Best Picture nominee. I mean, there are some films that have been ridiculously nominated because of
this stupid rule change.
Yeah, Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close, or Incredibly Close and Extremely Loud. I don't know. Fuck you.
So you'll still be watching.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited. But, I mean, it's also the 50th anniversary of Bond. I mean, I'm not saying you should just throw anything a bone, but you could have just thrown this a bone.
Well, you know what to get nominated for Best Picture? Winter's Bone.
Winter's Bone. That was, you know, that's, every year there's a
Winter's Bone. Starring John Hawkins, who got snubbed.
And Jennifer Lawrence, who didn't.
Who may win.
Every year there's that movie. There's the... this dirty indie film. This year it's Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Like a dirty indie film.
I mean, that's it. Like, oh, you know.
But you know what?
Winner's Bone, Wendy Ozark's eating squirrels. And by the way, Jennifer Lawrence is always eating squirrels in movies. She's always eating. And she's eating squirrels in Hunger Games. She's eating squirrels in
Beasts of the Southern Wild. It's dirty people eating cat food and catfish. But you know what? I have to make the one argument that because this rule, good, you know, these small independent films that otherwise wouldn't get any recognition do get some. And if it allows a space for new talent, new voices, I mean, if it hadn't been for that, do you think Jennifer Lawrence would have gotten as much acclaim as she would have if that movie hadn't gotten nominated for Best Picture? She hadn't gotten that Best Actress.
She still would have got Best Actress.
I mean, it really catapulted her.
Well, you know
her.
What? It's like, I'm glad people might try to see her more now.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what's good. But
I hear good things about this Emmanuel Riva. She's got a career.
You had one more slot you could have nominated. Like, I think that's good. But here's the other thing. That's not why you made this rule change. And let's face it, is Amore going to play, like, in Kentucky? Is Amore going to play in Indiana now that
nope.
it's nominated for Best Picture? That's the thing. Like, Amore's nominated for Best Picture. Well-deserving, but it's like, is this...
But Beast of the Southern Wild, May, and despite your feelings about the movie, I still think it's a good movie. And if it gets a wider release, you know,
you
good on it.
A lot of people think it's a good movie. A lot of people are fucking wrong.
It's a movie about a hush puppy and her daddy, and they lived in the bathtub.
Yeah, you know, it's about... here's the thing. In all honesty, I'm serious about this. If you listen to the podcast, you like Beats of the Southern Wild, please contact the Facebook page and let me know why, because I'm having trouble understanding the meanings of... I got issues with Life of Pi, too. We didn't get to them. But that movie fucking is a betrayal, if you ask me. It's a well-made betrayal, which is why I don't have... I'm not mad that Ang Lee's nominated, because
he's a great filmmaker.
It's an extremely well-made film. I have issues with what that film is saying, too.
That's our Oscar episode.
Well, you know what? Before we go out, anything in these other categories that you wanted to...
I think...
You know...
Foreign film. I mean, Amour is the lock for the best foreign language film.
So, Hanukkah's gonna win an award.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been some surprises in the past in that category.
Well, who was it that didn't... What was the front runner that didn't win?
Amelie.
Yeah.
That didn't win.
My best film of the decade, by the way.
A great film.
Yeah. What was nominated last year that didn't win?
No, last year the front runner did win. The Iranian film.
Oh, A Separation.
Separation.
No, there was a year before there was a front runner that got snubbed.
The White Ribbon. Michael Haneke.
Right.
The White Ribbon. So he's been fucked over before, but I feel like a more... Somehow, actually, this movie about watching a woman slowly deteriorate and die is... And that's not a spoiler.
It's in the title.
Is somehow his most... palpable film in a lot of ways. I mean, that says something about him as a filmmaker.
Music score, real fast. I hope they don't give it to John Williams for Lincoln, because he could have shit out a better score.
This is the one.
It sounds like something like a John Williams impersonator would have done.
You know what's funny?
A lot of horns and brass.
I don't really like the score category.
I thought Argo had an excellent score. It's a very melodic.
But you know what? I don't feel there's a lot of look, here's the thing. I mentioned Cloud Atlas earlier. I actually did think it might get a score nominee, because I think that score...
That
is
movie beautiful. Was just roundly ignored.
It was beautiful. Yeah, you know what? Snow White and the Huntsman got two technical nominations. That movie was the worst piece of shit of the year. Ugh. And my beloved Cloud Atlas can't get any techno... That's a beautiful score. Some of my favorite scores did not get nominated. That Moonrise Kingdom has a
yes.
wonderful score. You know what? I'll tell you this. As much as I don't like Beasts of the Wild...
Phenomenal score.
Phenomenal. Very memorable
Also
score.
Done by the director. Did it with a museum. Memorable score. Excellent. It's the kind of music that I'm going to see... we're going to see in movie trailers for the next 5 years.
I agree.
We're going to play that music and be like, what is this so uplifting?
They should have nominated him for Best Score instead of Best Director.
You know what movie has an excellent score, by the way? Totally off the topic. Michael Bay's The Island. That's a fantastic score. Didn't expect to hear that coming out of my mouth.
You know, none of these scores are that. I, you know, when in doubt, I might go on something like that. Like
once again, this could get the Lincoln. You know, John Williams.
See, I still think in the tech categories, you're going to see
Life of Pi. Well, Skyfall,
Life of Pi, Sound Awards. I think you're going to see Life of Pi, Life of Pi, Life of Pi.
Now, Thomas Newman, he's the one who did all the music in all the Pixar films, right?
Yeah. Randy Newman.
Yes, different. Not related.
And that wasn't for you. That
Did
was
Thomas
for
Newman
audience.
Do The Shawshank Redemption? I want to say yes. We'll look it up afterwards.
We'll never know.
This is great radio. Great podcasting.
And let's just say quickly, song.
Adele.
Adele's got to win, right?
But now we have Academy Award nominated Seth MacFarlane. You know how many fucking jokes we're going to hear about this when he hosts? Hey, let's talk about that real fast. I don't think Seth MacFarlane is going to be a good host.
I think he's going to appeal to a lot of people.
I think he's going to be mean-spirited and snarky. I think it's going to be, like, the worst of Ricky Gervais.
I think he's going to be able to get away with mean-spirited and snarky, because he's not like Ricky Gervais. He's a little more, like, the way he's put together, he's this well-quaffed kind of, like, he's
not an actor, though. I mean, he's a voice guy, he's an animator, but he's very stiff, I feel.
I think he is, but I think he's going to be able to... I think he's going to get away with it.
Listen, he can't be worse than fucking James Franco.
Well, no, here's the thing. He's going to be better than Franco, and he's going to appeal to a more younger crowd than a Billy Crystal.
I think Tina Fey and Amy Poehler should just do it for the next 20 years.
Yeah, by the way, because we're not... This is going to be weeks removed when we get off Oscar. Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, you're right, they should host everything ever. They are wonderful. They are charming. They are... I mean, you know...
The only host who does a better job, I think, is Neil Patrick Harris at the Tonys.
But you know what's funny? Amy Poehler had some zingers
yeah.
that I feel like when Ricky Gervais would give similar yeah. zingers, but Amy Poehler's so fucking adorable.
And she deadpans it so well.
She deadpans. Well, like the joke about Catherine Bigelow being married to James Cameron so she knows what yeah. torture's like. You know, the Taylor Swift.
Or what thing. About the line, hey, Lita Dunham, glad we helped you get through middle school.
Which is right, and also for them, scarily true.
And Taylor Swift, you keep your hands off Michael J. Fox's son. He is a very nice boy.
I'll be kind of annoyed if anything, because the Les Mis song was just kind of thrown in. Adele's got to win an Oscar. Plus, how great is it when she speaks?
Well, you know, if they gave it to 3-6 Mafia, they give this award. Last year, the dude from Flight of the Conchords won.
And by the way, but deservedly so, of yeah. the two nominees.
Oh, that's right. That happened last year.
You know what's
year.
Disappointing? I'm assuming we're not going to get to see Adele perform Skyfall, because right. they don't seem to do that anymore. But, Adele also, let's face it, that Skyfall song, it's a good song.
It's a, good song.
It's a great Bond song and a kind
it's
of...
It's an iconic Bond song.
It's a Shirley Bassey-esque song, which kind of hints back to old Bond, but it brings a new Bond. And, by the way, what, Adele's like 23 years old?
Yeah.
And look at all this that she has.
Good on her. You know what, she deserves it.
She's good. She's good.
So that's our Oscar show.
That is our Oscar show. You know, use us to...
To make your bets. And if you lose money because of this podcast, there are no refunds.
There are no refunds. Just like there are no refunds in life.
Yep.
I guess it's just us plugging.
What yeah, you know, you guys know where to find us. Twitter at TheSeanDavid. Facebook. My book, Triumvirs, TRIUMVIRS on Amazon. Amazon Kindle. So, you know what to do.
At The Real Will Link. Articles on U1Can. The PM Show with Larry Minetti doing reviews. Meh. But guess what, everybody? Next week...
Mystery guests.
Mystery. The whole show is clouded in secrecy. It's...
You'll need a cloud atlas to get through it.
50th episode. Quarter Quell. 1 year anniversary. End of season one. It's everything. Next week's show is everything you've ever wanted an episode of Will Sean Podcast.
If you only listen to one episode... Don't make it that one, because it'll be different.
Yeah.
listen to some others.
If you only listen to one episode, may I recommend the Cassie J. Snyder one, the Lindsay Hollister one. Those are really good episodes.
Jesse Kahnweiler one.
Yeah.
Pretty much any of our female guests.
Yeah. If you listen to anything, but if you listen to two episodes, listen to the 50th.
It'll be fun, and after that, we have...
We have a little to be determined, so I wasn't even going to say anything.
Yeah.
We have some people booked for the month of February, but we'll tell you about that all next week.
Don't worry about it. Just tune in. Good luck in your Oscar pools. And once again, thank you for a phenomenal first year, and hopefully it'll
just
keep getting
bigger. We still got one episode for that phenomenal first year.
Right, fine, fuck you. I take all that back.
What if we die before then?
Well, that's why I got to get it out.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I think we're finished.
We're finished.